This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. We'll explain why we're playing the Bee Gees in just a little bit. And it has nothing to do with the movie Airplane. Sudden cardiac arrest is one of the leading causes of death in the U.S., and about 92% of cardiac arrest victims die before reaching the hospital. But statistics show immediate CPR and the use of an automated external defibrillator, or AED, could save thousands of lives each year. Joining me to talk about the issue are Cincinnati Fire Department Lieutenant Mark Sanders and Mike Kappa, retired district chief and the current CPR AED instructor with the fire department. You can join our conversation. The number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Thank you both for being here. And I think before we started, you said between the two of you have 75 years of experience of doing this stuff.
So that's correct.
So lots of experience in the room to talk about CPR. Well, this may seem like an obvious question, but define sudden cardiac arrest. And I guess when I think of that, I think, well, that means somebody's having a heart attack. But I guess that's not necessarily always true.
No, it's two different things, really. So if I'm having chest pain, what I want to do is call 911. And that could be a heart attack. And in most cases, that's a small blood clot or piece of fat that has got blocked in one of my minor coronary arteries. What sudden cardiac arrest is, a major coronary artery is blocked and my heart goes into what we call ventricular fibrillation, and that is a deadly arrhythmia. So that's why AEDs are so important. If someone grabs their chest or complains of chest pain and then they go down, automated external defibrillator will shock the heart and cause all the pacemakers to fire. And hopefully the two main pacemakers will take over again. What ventricular fibrillation is, our heart has about 40 or 60 extra pacemakers. And due to a lack of blood and oxygen going to a section of the heart, our heart goes into what we call VFib or ventricular fibrillation. And an AED causes all of them to fire. And then the two main pacemakers theoretically will take over again.
And you've got an AED there. We'll talk about it in a couple of minutes. But let's start first with this sudden. I'm assuming when this happens, the person's going to go down almost immediately.
Yes, that's correct.
So when that happens, friends, bystanders, family that are there, what do they need to do?
The very first thing you do is you call 911. For an adult, if someone is in ventricular fibrillation, and that is the most common cardiac arrhythmia that we go into as we die. So the most important thing is get an automated external defibrillator, an AED traveling in the direction of the patient that is down. So the very first thing you want to do is call 911.
With CPR, it seems like it's my impression that the standards of that a few years ago changed, where we were used to be told it was the chest compressions and mouth-to-mouth. And then I think I was I think the fire department's medical director was teaching council members how to do CPR, and they said, forget the mouth-to-mouth, the chest compressions are most important. So which is it?
Okay, very good question. Obviously, if you have the time, we recommend that you go to a full CPR class with American Heart Association and American Red Cross. If you don't do that, and God forbid a loved one does go down, the best thing you can do is do chest compressions, even though you've never done that before. So what you do is you get the patient on a solid ground. So if they're in bed, you have to get them off of the bed. Then you get over the top of the patient. You lock your hands together and put the heel of your hands in the lower half of the sternum. This is just below the nipples. And you push down about 2.5 inches. And you do this 100 times a minute. So as we all know, there's contagious diseases out there. So we really don't want to do mouth-to-mouth on people we don't know. So the American Heart Association, and you can go to their website, says that if you don't want to exchange germs with somebody, just do chest compressions alone. Now, as firefighters, we're considered healthcare providers, and we use what we call a bag valve mask. So we do use oxygen hooked up to, and I know we all seen these things on a movie, where we do ventilate the lungs. So ventilating the lungs is better. And this, if this was my my loved one who I know don't have communicable diseases, I would do mouth to mouth. That is the best. But for people you don't know, you might want to just do chest compressions.
Mark, you were starting to demonstrate the chest compressions there, and that's kind of what we were, there's a rhythm that you're supposed to use, and that I think the American Heart Association, the Red Cross one, that's why we played the Bee Gees, that was a good rhythm to use to do the chest compressions.
And it is, and that's it's only fitting that you had that music coming in, because that is about 100 beats per minute. So I know most everybody's got a little rhythm out there, and certainly we don't want to minimize this, but that is something that you can get in your head, that song. And if you have the unfortunate situation, as Chief Kappa said, call 911, get us en route, because they have found, literature has shown, that chest compressions alone can give us an opportunity to keep that heart in a mode, as Chief Kappa talked about, ventricular fibrillation. So when we get there with our either AED or our other monitors and defibrillators, we have a greater opportunity to make a difference. And I think that I just was in a meeting the other day, and of those that are shockable rhythms, and that's what CPR is trying to do, to give healthcare providers the best chance to have a shockable rhythm, we're approaching 30% survival rates from those patients that we come upon who have had bystander CPR and early defibrillation. So it really makes a difference.
Is there, some people may be worried about pushing too hard, perhaps cracking a rib. Should they really worry about that, or just do the CPR, just do the chest compressions?
Anybody over the age of 50, and I'm over 50, you're going to break the cartilage where my ribs connect to my sternum. And that is normal. Okay, so you continue CPR. And yes, some people do come back. So that is normal. So when you start doing chest compressions and you hear a cracking sound, for people over 50, continue doing chest compressions.
And those chest compressions, once you start, you really should not stop until, in the best case, a paramedic or somebody with the fire department shows up, or you get the AED there.
Well, once again, that is true. Once it started, we're finding more and more that we want to continue that. Even moving a patient down the steps is not advisable for us anymore. We basically bring the emergency room to you. So we're finding more and more that if in those precious few seconds, that in minutes with CPR, quick defibrillation, and then advanced life support, which they call the chain of survival. If that is done properly, if there's going to be a good outcome, in most cases it starts to happen while we are still in the residence.
When you hear about traumatic injuries, and I've done a little bit of reporting on this, I think the term is the golden hour. What is that? I mean, that's a trauma injury. What are we? I don't think you probably have a golden hour with these kind of events. What kind of time frame are we talking about? And I think the longer it goes, the less likely you're going to survive this sudden cardiac event.
Exactly. There's a lot of factors involved in that once our heart goes into fibrillation. So the question is, how long does it stay in fibrillation? When someone is doing bystander CPR, before our paramedic units show up, the save rate goes up dramatically. So that's very important. And there's some cases that temperature of the room also has a factor on it. There's some cases where people have been falling through the ice and were under the water for up to 40 minutes, and these people have been brought back. So that's not the case. And room side temperature, if after about 10 or 15 minutes, the cells really start to die, and it's hard to bring somebody back when that happens. So.
You've got your AED there, and they are certainly easier to find now. I know a lot of public places, and I think they even have a heart symbol or AED on them.
Exactly.
At a church or a school or a shopping mall. So as best we can, and this thing will talk to us.
Yes, it will.
Tell us how it works.
Okay. By all means, if someone goes down, and I hope it's not a friend or a relative, and you see an AED and you think, well, I'm not trained in this, so I'm not going to do it. Don't want you to think that way. You need to take the AED off the wall and open it up. There's pictures, and it speaks to you in English, and it tells you exactly what to do. So do you want me to turn this?
Yeah, turn us on.
So when you open this up, there's two pads, and there's a picture on here. So your heart sits underneath your sternum, kind of at an angle. It goes from the top right-hand side to the lower left-hand side. So I want to put one of these pads on the top right-hand side of my chest, and here's a picture on this pad. I want to put the other pad on the lower left-hand side of my chest.
So you've got one on the upper right side,
yes.
One sort of on the lower, and it looks like it's almost under the left arm?
Yes, it's down low. So I want the electricity to pass from the upper right to the lower left. So when I see these pictures on these pads, I put it right on, then I turn the machine on. Before I go any further, there should be a razor blade with this. Some people have hairy chests, so in order to get these things to stick, you may have to shave a little bit where these pads go on. Okay, so I'm going to turn the machine on, and because this is a training model, it may tell me connect electrodes. The AEDs you pull off the wall, the electrodes are already going to be connected. And then it's going to say analyzing now. So that means I don't want to touch a patient. So it's looking for a heart rate. It's looking for a systole, a normal heart rate, ventricular fibrillation, because that's what it's going to shock. So maybe this patient does have a heart rate and I just haven't felt the pulse. Or if the patient's been down for a long time, the patient is straight line, which is systole, and it's not going to shock that. So when it's analyzing, I do not want to touch a patient because it will pick up my heart rate and it'll say no shock advised. Then it's going to say if this is a witnessed arrest, press cancel. That means there's a button here that says cancel. So a witness arrest means I was with this patient when they were conscious, and now they're unconscious. So then I'm going to press cancel on here, and it's going to shock the patient regardless. So I'll go through these steps now. So the very first thing you do.
And one thing, before you do that, now the shock thing, it's a computer essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make the decision as to whether the person is shocked or not, not the person operating it.
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. The companies, there's about six different models out there. They all work exactly the same. This particular model we're using is Physio-Control, and there's been a tremendous amount of research in here. So the AED makes a decision if there is a shockable rhythm, ventricular fibrillation. And this is called a semi-automatic, so it tells me to press the shock button. So there's two buttons here. There's an on button, and then there's a red button with a bolt of electricity on it. So right now, I'm going to turn the machine on, and it's going to say analyzing. Okay, it takes a minute, takes about 5 or 10 seconds to warm up here.
Stand clear.
Stand clear, it says. Now it's checking the patient. I'm not touching the victim. Is it
analyzing now. Stand clear.
And this only takes a few seconds. So.
Start CPR.
So now I'm starting CPR. My hands are in the middle of the sternum.
If you witnessed the arrest, push cancel.
So it says if I witness the arrest, if this person went down in my presence, press cancel, and then it's going to go up and shock the patient. So we're going to go with this.
Shock advised.
So now it's shock advised.
Stand clear. Push shock button.
You can hear it. There's a red button here that's flashing. I say, I'm clear, you're clear, everybody's clear, nobody is touching the victim. I'm going to shock now. And then I press a button.
And then it will reanalyze?
Yes.
Stand clear.
It's analyzing again.
Analyzing now.
Analyzing
Stand
now.
Stand clear.
It's shocking again.
And it's doing that automatically? You don't have to hit the button again?
Well, I do. It'll tell
okay.
me. Preparing to shock.
Stand clear. Push shock button.
So now the red button's flashing, and now I'm pushing. I'm clear, you're clear. I look at the patient, nobody's touching it. And I press a button. Then it gives a shock.
And and that was a question
Start
I was going to ask.
CPR.
You hear about this, I know, in an emergency room on the TV shows, you know, they'll always say, you know, clear and then do the
mm-hmm.
shocks.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing. You don't want to be, just like in the ER, you're not going to be wanting to touch the person while the machine is doing what it's supposed to do.
To my knowledge, no healthcare provider has ever been electrocuted with these, okay? However, I've had reports that EMS workers have, they felt a shock if they were touching the victim or...
The cot, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Mark has more street experience than I do. So have you been shocked, Mark? So.
I have not, but I've seen somebody get a little tingle. So you got to make sure that they were moving about and they, you know, just maybe had the cot and very rare.
As you're out on the street, have you seen where one of these have made a difference?
I have, and they are becoming more common. Many restaurants, many institutions that you may go into, they have these. I know schools have them on site, and we have had them in operation upon arrival. And then just to describe what we would do then, we come in almost like an army of four people, and the standards are our response should be in 4 minutes. So you talk about time. We try to achieve the standard of responding in less than 4 minutes, and then advanced life support, that would be the typical life squad, would be there in 6 minutes. But in Cincinnati, we're fortunate enough under the direction of Chief Braun, and many of the outlying areas have followed this model as well. Our engines, our fire engines, when somebody asks, why is the fire engine here? They have all the paramedic equipment that a life squad would have. So we're very fortunate in this region to have a great hospital network and great healthcare providers through fire departments.
So in the city, if you have, you know, if you've called for a sudden cardiac arrest and you see a fire truck pull up, you should not say, wait a minute, I called for a life squad, not a fire truck. You should be glad to see the fire truck or even if it's a ladder truck.
Yes.
You're glad that they're there.
Yes, they are all of our engines are equipped with all the equipment you would find in an ambulance. So rest assured, we're there, and it takes a team, and it's teamwork. And as Chief Caput described, each member on that company has a role. So we have a very good system here in Cincinnati and Southwest Ohio.
Now, we let the machine there go through two cycles. Does it stop after? I mean, how many cycles will it go through?
It will continue to do this. What it does, if it does not have a shockable rhythm, it'll say no shock advice, start CPR. And the theory is you're reoxygenating the heart. And you do CPR for 2 minutes, and there's a countdown numerical system on here, and then it'll say stop CPR, analyzing again. And then hopefully at some point in time, if the paramedics aren't on the scene, they will arrive on the scene, and they have a drug we've all heard called epinephrine, and that helps rejuvenate the heart. So.
And this, how long has this technology been around?
I'm proud to say the Cincinnati Fire Department was the first fire department in the state of Ohio to have AEDs on our engine companies. And if my memory serves me right, it was 1992.
And certainly, like everything, I think I read, it's actually more affordable now. They're not as costly as they were, you know, several years ago.
They're about $1,500. So.
And how do people go about getting these?
You can go online. There's different, like I said, there's about six different models out there. I would go to your computer, your search engine, and put purchase AED, and all the companies will come up with price ranges and stuff like that. So.
Does the fire department offer classes on how to, I mean, I guess it's great to have them, but I think I would feel better knowing it's there, but I've also been trained how to use it.
That would be a better question for Chief Caput, but I believe we do not for the public. We do some general, you know, advisement on hands on the chest to different community groups. We do not have a specific training program for the public.
We do not, no.
What about, and anything, we are a society with lawsuits. Is there any liability issue in using an AED?
I'm sure the lawyers will tell you that anybody can sue anybody. There is something called in the state of Ohio the Good Samaritan Act. So if you are sued, your defense attorney will use that Good Samaritan Act. So I can't answer that, and I'm not an attorney, but I think everybody's liable for everything. But I would not hesitate to help someone if they would go down. I'd be there all the time, and I suggest that to people. So if you call in 911 that you see somebody that's unconscious and you don't think they have a pulse, the dispatcher is going to talk you through how to do CPR even though you've never had a class. So
does the city require that these, are there any city requirements that these be in public places, or is it all voluntary right now that if you want one, great, but you're not required by the city to have one?
I don't know if that's true. I know there are in most places of assembly. They're at the airports. They're at music hall. I was there the other day and seen them because I teach this class all the time. I notice them. So a lot of churches have them. What I would suggest, okay, generally children and infants don't go into ventricular fibrillation if they go down. If they're unconscious and don't have a heart rate, it's generally some type of airway problem that started this. So the exception is little league baseball teams that are have blunt trauma to the chest, hit by a line drive in the chest, can throw your heart into fibrillation. So we suggest that all Little League baseball teams have an AED present. I think that happened in Cincinnati about 3 or 4 years ago. So
we've been discussing sudden cardiac arrest and the importance of CPR and automated external defibrillators with Cincinnati Fire Department Lieutenant Mark Sanders. and Mike Kappa, the retired district chief and current CPR AED instructor with the fire department. You'll find links to more information on our website, wvxu.org. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we thank you for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Jay Hanselman.